It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Thursday, January 11th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
The nation is yearning for a complete departure from Mugabeism, where repression and oppression were the order of the day, and this is his litmus test.
I'm Salimo Magaya with Zimbabwe Divine Destiny. We'll have more on that story and others coming up. Good evening, I'm Chidonvere.
And I'm Kutanai Matetwa on VOA's Zimbabwe Today.
A collective body of churches in Zimbabwe today broke its silence and called for the rule of law to prevail, now that a new government has been installed. Reporter Kudzai Zinawashe has the report from Harare.
Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, in many ways is speaking a different language than his predecessor and former boss Robert Mugabe. He is promising a break from the past. Zimbabwe Divine Destiny is made up of various religious churches. Its leader, Bishop Anselimo Magaya, said Thursday they welcome Mnangagwa's stance.
We have heard the incumbent giving indications that he might want to actually depart from what we have actually known before. We therefore commend President Mnangagwa for realizing the need for change.
But he says the president must act dramatically to break from the repression of the past.
However, the nation, particularly the church, still expects a real paradigm shift in the entire government system if at all we are going to see a real change. The nation is yearning for a complete departure from Mugabeism, where repression and oppression were the order of the day, and this is his litmus test.
Thus far, he noted in disappointment, not much has changed from Mugabe's era.
The recent harassment and arrests and alleged torture of the youth activists who demonstrated on the Gukurahundi issue when President Mnangagwa visited Bulawayo is a clearest indication that the ZANU-PF-led government still struggles to adhere to constitutionalism.
Gukurahundi refers to the massacres of civilians in the Matabeleland region by an army regiment from the early 1983 to 1987. Victims, their families, and government critics increasingly call for the new government to address that legacy. Magaya suggests a way forward for the Mnangagwa-led government.
It is our fervent belief as a church to understand that for any nation or any new dispensation that wishes to turn a new leaf ought to start well through transparency and truth-telling. It is therefore incumbent upon the new government to account and to openly disclose the whereabouts of every victim of this macabre moment.
Magaya says the church cannot keep quiet as these are matters of justice, peace and national development. He calls for full disclosure on the fate of victims of the Mugabe administration, saying that will help the nation heal and allow the spirit of forgiveness to prevail. He further calls for the rule of law to be applied evenly. That comment follows recent arrests of ZANU-PF members aligned to the G40 faction, which begged Mugabe and his wife, Grace Mugabe. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Former Zimbabwean Minister of Higher and Tertiary Education, Science and Technology Development, Jonathan Moyo, gave a fiery interview last night on the BBC show Hard Talk. Moyo is wanted on corruption charges in Zimbabwe. He is currently in self-imposed exile in an unknown location. Since the military took control of the country in November and President Robert Mugabe resigned, he has been a vocal critic of the government through his social media channels. In the interview, Moyo said that Mugabe was ousted by a military coup, and Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, came to power through the bullet, not the ballot. There was swift reaction from ZANU-PF Permanent Secretary and presidential spokesperson, George Taremba, who said, "This is a bitter, bitter, defeated politician." Moyo was a member of the G40 faction that was affiliated with Mugabe's largely unpopular wife, Grace. Other members of the G40 faction still in Zimbabwe have been arrested and are facing corruption charges. I spoke with Joseph Tuma, Member of Parliament from Mpopoma, Pelandeba, to get a reaction about Professor Moyo's statements and whether they had any validity.
He also made a statement that this whole process of naming the new VPs, it militarized the government as opposed to just allowing the elections to happen as they were going to happen later on this year.
Well, according to what I understand, the elections are still going to go ahead this year, sometime this year. And also, this is not the first time a military man has been appointed into the system of governance. We have seen a lot of these military people coming in because, mind you, while they are there, it doesn't mean that they only study how to kill or be aggressive. They also study broadly in other spheres of our daily life. Most of them have degrees, they have PhDs, they even have, I'm sure now, by now, maybe probably have others who are now professors. It shouldn't be a surprise to see a military man come into the whole system of governance, as long as they have retired from their current position that they'll be holding.
And then on to a different subject. Do you think it would have been more prudent for him to come back to Zimbabwe and face charges against him as opposed to going on an international media platform to speak about the issues that are happening at home?
Well, one thing that I want to hasten to note is that to me, Zimbabwe must come first to anything else. We might have differences as people and as persons, but in those differences, let us not then be drawn into a situation whereby we end up demonizing the whole system, the whole government, and the such Zimbabwe, because we want a better Zimbabwe for our children and the future generation. So that can only happen if we all sing with one voice of unit of purpose and not denigrating any system. If we have any complaints or we are not satisfied about anything that is happening within our country, it's only prudent that we come in and face it. And besides, I think the rule of law still exists here. So if ever there is anybody who alleges on anybody, then it only follows that then proof must come out and that person should be tried fairly in a competent court of law. And if they are found not guilty, then they must definitely carry on with their normal life. And if they are found guilty, then they must pay for the sin that they would have done. So I personally would not run away if I know I haven't done anything wrong. I'll come and face the system and prove myself innocent so that my life goes on. Because you must remember that this then affects a whole chain of systems. We've got family to think of. We've got so many other things that we should think of when we do such things. So if I was anyone with that kind of dilemma, I would definitely, if I know that I'm not guilty of anything, I would come and face it.
That was Joseph Tuma, a member of parliament for the ZANU-PF.
Social media was not pleased with what the professor Jonathan Moyo had to say.
Mrs. Chida says, "Watching Jonathan Moyo's interview on Hard Talk. So this dude fled Zimbabwe but left his family in this very dangerous and unsafe place."
Charega says, "Jonathan Moyo banned BBC reporters from Zimbabwe when he was information minister. So why is he seeking for publicity with BBC now?"
Peter Ndoro says, "When Emmerson Mnangagwa fled Zimbabwe in fear of his safety, you said senior officials who flee after being fired are running away from being held accountable. Is that what you are doing?"
Mavure says, "Jonathan Moyo is a political science guru. A marketer can sell water to a drowning man. Moyo is that political science person who always spins according to his eyes and wishes. That's him and will never change. Praising Mugabe but hating Gukurahundi."
John Matuku T Tina says. Short memory for Jonathan Moyo. There was no picnic for Morgan Tsvangirai when the army was deployed to settle a political question in 2002. It's called precedence.
M_Rude says, I feel sorry for Jonathan Moyo. What goes around comes around. Shame.
Adi says, this interview was much ado about nothing. It shows that Jonathan Moyo and Patrick Shuau are suffering from the same mental illness. They think the rest of Zimbabwe miss Bob. We were not looting together, so we are not at all sad that he is gone. Zimbabwe's opposition movement for democratic change, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, says the ailing party leader has a constitutional right to select his successor. The party says any elected successor can either be endorsed or rejected by MDCT organs, such as the Standing Committee. Party deputy spokesperson Tabitha Kumalo says this is the only way of selecting leaders outside an elective Congress. Three MDCT vice presidents, Nelson Chamisa, Elias Muzuri, and Tokozane Nkube, are the contenders for the top party posts ahead of the coming elections. For more details on jostling for the top posts in the opposition party, VOA's Gibbs Dube speaks with Kumalo and independent political analyst Dr. Nkululeko Sibanda, based at Britain's Huddersfield University.
You know, these names are going to come into the limelight because those are our three vice presidents. That's the reason why they are coming. And the expectation of one of them to take over is there. It is being confirmed. Whereas the MDC party, it was agreed that the president, Richard Morton Tsvangirai, has a right to appoint and disappoint members of the Standing Committee. And that is why he eventually appointed Vithu Mzulu and Vithu Chamisa. He was guided by that resolution, which was endorsed by the National Executive and the National Council of the MDC. One thing that we cannot do as a party is to be unconstitutional. The resolution of the 2014 Congress are now a constitutional. So we have to implement them in letter and spirit. If those resolutions to some people are wrong, unfortunately, we cannot change make resolutions to suit individuals. We are making resolutions to suit the needs and wants of the Zimbabweans.
So, Dr. Sibanda, indications as per what Honorable Kumalo is saying is that Mr. Tsvangirai has got the right to actually choose a successor. What is your take on that?
I think that this is a confirmation that the MDC had become and has become a clearly undemocratic, slightly autocratic organization, in the sense that the principle of appointing and disappointing in a democracy must be reserved for the same person, the same group, or at least somebody who there must be recourse to that. To say that the MDC gave the Congress, the MDC Congress allowed a vice president to be elected, and that person can also be diselected by just one individual without cause, without any reason, is certainly an indication, if I understand correctly, certainly an indication of aspects, very important aspects of the MDC becoming just as bad as ZANU-PF ZANU-PF rules. In some instances, probably worse, because I think in ZANU-PF, you'd have to go through some process to disappoint a person who's elected. And I think it is certainly unfortunate. Having said that, I think it is absolutely appropriate for the people in the MDC to follow the rules of the MDC as they are in the process. I think the MDC must engage in a political process, not just a legal process, a political process of regularizing democracy and allowing the debate around succession to be always as broad as is possible.
So, Honorable Kumalo, what's your reaction to what Dr. Sibanda is saying? Saying the MDC has become worse than ZANU-PF in terms of this succession issue. So, what's your reaction to that?
Those are the rules of our party. Wrong or right, we have to follow them. Because if we don't, then no one is going to stop us from doing anything that is unconstitutional. Because every Christian and Hindu will wake up and do whatever they please. Those are the rules that we have. Those are the policies that we are given by the Congress. Wrong or right, we will follow them. So all what we are saying is we make those laws. No one is perfect, but those are the resolutions that we are given by the Congress. Whether we want it or we don't, we have to follow it. Whether we are dictators, you can call us all names under the same, neither here nor there. The critical question or answer that we need to have is together with the political parties in the opposition. What do we do to remove vanity in power and restore the livelihood of Zimbabweans? Zimbabweans are suffering.
So now, in conclusion, Dr. Spanda, what Honorable Kumalo is saying is that in the MTCT, power resides in one person, and that is Mr. Tsvangirai, in terms of, you know, some of these appointments. So maybe your argument actually falls off here. So let's get your reaction, Dr. Spanda, on all that.
I think that the one thing that I am taking and that pleases me with the stance that Honorable Kumalo is taking is what I sense to be her insistence on lawfulness, constitutionality, and her advice, which would be my advice, that look, there may be problems with our laws, but the right way to go about it is to follow process, wait for the next Congress, raise the issue, call for an extraordinary Congress if there are such provisions. Look at how ZANU-PF was calling for an extraordinary Congress to regularize certain things. I think that is admirable. And I think that that's what a lot of Africa requires. It requires lawfulness even in the face of unlawfulness or in the face of dictatorial tendencies. We need to strengthen the tenets of the law, the tenets of constitutionalism.
That was Tabitha Kumalo, MDCT Deputy Spokesperson, and Dr. Nkululeko Sibanda of Huddersfield University, speaking with VOA's Gibbs Dube.
The World Bank says political uncertainty and the rising debt deficit will cut Zimbabwe's economic growth to 0.9% this year. That is down from an estimated 2.8% growth rate for gross domestic product last year. In its latest global economic forecast, the multilateral lender forecasts world GDP growth will average 3.1% this year, up from an estimated 3% last year. Much of the gain will be from emerging and developing economies, as commodity price stabilizes and domestic demands rise for sub-Saharan Africa. The bank experts' average growth will be 3.2%. Growth next year could rise to 3.6%. The bank says, but for Zimbabwe, the bank forecasts that GDP growth next year will be just 0.2%. There are risks for African economics, however. The bank says the continent could be badly shaken by a slump in China. In addition, the burden of high foreign debt could undermine growth in many nations.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America, Studio 22. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa in Washington, D.C. At 48 past the hour, we continue with the news.
South Africa's city of Cape Town is approaching what the mayor calls Day Zero, the day the city of 4 million will have to shut off the taps because it has run out of water after years of drought. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg. The sage also has political tones, with the mayor's warning being overshadowed by allegations of misconduct.
Day Zero, Cape Town Mayor Patricia de Lille acknowledges, sounds like a Hollywood movie. It is the day the city will implement its harshest water restrictions to date. This week, she explained what will happen when the water supply reaches a new low point.
Then at that point, we will turn off most of the taps. We will not turn off the taps. We will reduce the pressure in poorer areas like informal settlements. But we'll turn off the taps and then at a blast, approximately 200 sites across the city, people will have to go and collect water from there. And when you collect your water from there, you'll only receive 25 liters per person per day.
The beautiful beach-lined port city has suffered drought for 3 consecutive years. For months, officials have imposed strict controls on the city's water supply. Cape Townians have been banned from washing their cars, watering their lawns, or filling their pools, and have been encouraged to keep showers under 2 minutes and only flush the toilet when absolutely necessary. The latest restrictions, imposed January 1st, slashed each household's monthly allowance nearly in half. But critics of the mayor and her party say it is unfair to blame the situation entirely on the drought. Dalil is a member of the Democratic Alliance Party, which has long ruled the Western Cape province. The mayor has come under fire for unrelated allegations of misconduct and corruption, which are prompting calls for her dismissal. African National Congress acting party leader in the province, Kaya Magatla, says the Democratic Alliance record of mismanagement is partly to blame for the water crisis.
When this thing was raised more than 5 years ago, that we are undergoing a serious drought in the Western Cape due to the natural causes, including the global warming. But the DA failed to execute mechanism in order to restrict the use of water, in order to manage that process properly, to extend that we are now reacting in a crisis that is already over our head.
Civil society groups like the South African Water Caucus say water allocation is the responsibility of the national government, and blame the ANC-led national government for failing to release enough drought funding due to mismanagement and corruption at the national level. Mayor Dalil says she is optimistic that if Cape Townians can stick to the limits, they can push Day Zero back.
We can avoid Day Zero if we all work together.
In the meantime, Cape Townians hope and pray for Day One of a long, soaking rain. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Malawi, police say they have issued an arrest warrant for a budding local hip-hop artist behind a new song rights activists say promotes violence against women. The title of the song is Rape, and the government censorship board is also reviewing it amid calls that it had to be banned. Lamik Masina has the story for VOA from Blantyre.
Local artist Mwiza Javula raps in the Chichewa language, which is widely spoken in Malawi. In his latest song, a man is telling a woman, long refusing his sexual advances, that he will one day get her drunk, seal her mouth with a tape or socks, and rape her. The song ends with the sound of a woman crying. The spokesperson for the Malawi National Police, James Gadadzela, told VOA authorities are seeking Javula for questioning.
We are looking to the artist for questioning. Wherever we may find him, we will definitely speak him. So I will not say much now, but he will actually divulge more information once he has been interviewed.
Javula released the song in December. It gained momentum on social media in early January. The public backlash was swift. Women's groups took to the social media under the hashtag ArrestJavula. Several popular online music distributors like MalawiMusic.com pulled the song and apologized. UN Women gender activist Habiba Osman works in the capital, Lilongwe.
It is a bad song that, you know, even as a parent, you would not want your child to listen or to get hold of such content or to be even given airtime in a normal society where human rights are entrenched in our constitution.
The artist Javula has apologized on his Facebook page and in interviews with the local media, but Osman says an apology is not enough.
I really think we need to go beyond saying sorry. So what we need to do is to really reflect as a nation, you know, beyond what this song is projecting, our attitude towards violence against women and girls. Is it something that we should look at as if it's normal? Because if people are free to express such kind of content in song, it means maybe also society just views these things as normal.
Organizations, including the Women Legal Resources Center, are calling on Malawi Censorship Board to ban Javula's song from radio and TV on moral grounds. Chief Censorship Officer Humphreys Mpondaminga told VOA the board is reviewing the case.
Once we are done, we'll communicate to the media. For now, let's remain quiet until we do a fair job of assessing the song first.
A girls' rights campaigner, Kathy Kita, is in Malawi's commercial capital, Blantyre.
Already it has given threat to a lot of people, like including myself. I wouldn't be comfortable like walking in the street when someone's singing that song coming in and back, because the next thing I'm thinking is, what are they going to do?
The artist told the local radio station that in part 2, which is yet to be released, the man in the story gets arrested.
Maybe people should hear part 2 if they are willing to, but if they don't want to hear part 2, fine. But for me, as a musician, I wasn't trying to offend anybody with the song.
A ban would prohibit public performance of the song, including broadcast on local radio and TV stations. But even though popular local sites have deleted the song, it can still found circulating in online chat groups. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Kenya Airways will start direct and non-stop flights to New York in October. The flights will be the first non-stop flights from East Africa to the United States. The airline's chief executive officer, Sebastian Mikos, says tickets go on sale today for the first flight. The eastbound flight to New York will take 15 hours and the return to Nairobi will take 14 hours. The U.S. has long banned direct flights from Kenya Airways over security concerns. However, Miko says U.S. and Kenya security officials have done audits of Jomo Kenyatta International Airport and have determined direct flights are possible. That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kutanai Matetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Davila broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. We leave you now with the song Amore by Ja Preza and Mr. Bao.